Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to Behind the 90 with Nika. Before we get started, I want to always explain what the 90% means. 90% of what we go through in life is about our past, and only 10% is about the here and now, making it very, very important to understand a person's 90%, which represents a person's story. I am so honored today to have a very special guest, my beautiful Butterfly. Butterfly was part of the documentary Behind the 90. I'm sorry, not Behind the 90 with Nika, but that's the docuseries. That's the production company. But she was part of, she was the reason why I was inspired to do the documentary. Ladies and gentlemen, please excuse me. But it's Beauty from Ashes, The Journey of Three Daughters. How could I have forgotten that? A beautiful Butterfly, like I said, she was the inspiration behind me doing the documentary. So I asked her to come today to be a part of the podcast. Beautiful Butterfly is very, very accomplished. She's an accomplished poet, and she's going to bless us with poetry. I hope I'm saying that right. Some poetry at the end of our show today. And she's an accomplished writer. So she is a mental health advocate for those suffering from mental illness. But I am so honored to have her here because Beautiful Butterfly is a survivor of child abuse. And I think we can say that now. Mm-hmm. And I'm so happy to say that. So without further ado, I would like to introduce my beautiful Butterfly. How are you, Butterfly?
I'm good. I'm so happy to see you. Be here.
I am happy to see you too. Before we get started, you know, this is a tough topic to discuss, however, very necessary, because at least 1 in 7 children have experienced child abuse or neglect in the past year in the United States. And that breaks my heart. Children living in poverty experience more abuse and neglect, experiencing poverty can place a lot of stress on families, which may increase the risk for child abuse and neglect. So, which makes it very important that we all, when you think of 1 in 7 children are being abused, that's tough. That's really, that breaks my heart to hear, because a lot of times you know, as a young person, you know, you don't know what's going on in a person's home. And even as an adult, sometimes you don't know what's going on in people's home because people can present very well and you'll never know what's actually going on.
True.
Yeah. So as a survivor of child abuse, you're a survivor. How would you define child abuse? Like in your experience, how would you define what child abuse is?
So first of all, I need to make a difference in child abuse and child neglect. Okay. People generalize that and say it's the same. It is not. Okay. Neglect is just a person who may not take care of their children, but they don't beat on them or down, you know, put them down or nothing like that. They just may not be the strongest person to get up in the morning and fix their breakfast, make sure they're ready for school, things of that nature. So that's neglect. Abuse is when child is being physically, verbally, mentally, and emotionally hit, touched or yelled at, kicked, beat with bruises and things of that nature. And so sometimes we don't, as society, we don't make a difference in it. We just call it all child abuse. We put it under one blanket, and we shouldn't do that, because then the children who are actually being hit, molested and things of that nature are now just under their parent is just neglectful. So nobody's searching deep into that.
So, okay, I never thought of it about it that way, because I was in my mind, I can see why you want to make that distinction, because it is a difference. Like you said, neglect doesn't always mean abuse, but I would think when you say abuse, would you say that's more intentional?
Yes, definitely. Okay. It comes from different things. Epigenetics plays into it. Mm-hmm. And then it comes from parents who take on more than they were prepared for. Mm-hmm. People get excited, oh, I'm pregnant, I'm having a baby, but they keep that baby in the baby stage so long that now it's time to move on to the toddler stage and they're not prepared. That kid touching stuff, and instead of them making the house toddler proof, they'd rather just beat it into the toddler. Mm-hmm. Don't touch my stuff. Don't do this. Don't do that.
Right.
And all the while forgetting that baby's brain has no understanding of what's going on in this world. They just came here and they're trying to learn. And then so now once you start the abuse, you continue it as they get older, because now it becomes almost like a power for you to. You got that kid under control. You got those kids under control. You run the show and nobody can tell you what to do.
Yeah. So, Butterfly, who was your, I know you're a survivor of abuse. Who was your abuser?
So we have to go in three parts with that. So the first part was my biological mother was my physical and emotional abuser and mental abuser. She would put me down, tell me I wasn't pretty. When people would tell me I'm pretty, she'd be like, they lying. They just saying that, you know, and you would think that that would boost her ego because I look like her. So you would think she'd be like, yeah, my baby pretty. No, it was the opposite. And then the physical abuse came later. The first thing I remember, 6 years old, I love my hair. I always loved my hair. And so I was just like patting my ponytail and just excited. Because I can't remember who did my hair because I had so many people not taking care of me to the point I don't even remember who did my hair at that point. But it was in a big pony, poofy ponytail on top of my head. And she said, you think you cute? Come here. So I walked over to her not thinking she was finna do nothing to me because she never hit me before this. She never, any type of physical touching of me, including hugs.
Nothing. It was just verbal.
It was just verbal. And she pulled me to her and cut my hair off. And then told everybody that I told her a teddy bear did it. And I'm like, how can y'all believe this when everybody know I love my hair? But they believed it. And so I was, you know, that was the first thing she ever did to me. And then I think I was around 8 or 9 and I had went and I told her something wasn't right down there because my brothers had been touching me. But I couldn't tell her my brothers had been touching me because they was paying me. So I just told her something wasn't right. She said, that's because you're stupid. And then she whooped me. Like, why are you whooping me? I didn't get that. Right. Then the beating started, like, for every little thing. Like, I'm talking beatings for not cleaning the kitchen. I'm a little kid, but she had already deemed me a grown woman, basically, because I wasn't cleaning my room, right? I wasn't cleaning, you know, her house up the way she liked. So the physical abuse became evident that it was just more and more. And for little things, but my worst whooping that I ever remember, and I don't mind recalling it, but it is painful. I didn't know how to count yet, and I was a little kid. And so she sent me to the store. She gave me the money. The change was going to be a dime. I knew what a dime was because I knew the little dime, but I didn't know 2 nickels equaled a dime.
Okay.
So the man gave me 2 nickels, and I got home, and I handed her just 1 nickel because I knew it was only supposed to be 1 coin, and she beat the brakes off of me over a nickel. And I mean, she beat me, but thankfully I had hid the nickel in the dirt and I went back and got it.
Okay. So you thought that the guy had given you extra money, mm-hmm. and you was going to keep some extra money for yourself.
Yeah, I was going to go give me some Nihilators later.
Right? Exactly. What kid wouldn't want extra? Like, wow, I got extra money. So I'm going to give what belongs to her and I'm going to keep a little for myself so I can give myself some things. Because she would deprive you of those luxuries of, you know, candy. Not saying candy is a luxury because, you know, we don't have to have candy, but exactly. It's nice to have snacks and goodies. And so you weren't allowed those things. And so you feel like, wow, I got an extra
coin.
Exactly, coin. So let me take advantage of it. And she knew what she was supposed to get back.
Exactly.
Okay. So when you think about, did you ever have a good relationship with your mom? Was there ever a time that you had a good relationship with her?
No. And I hate to say no so easily because it's painful to think about. I actually wrote a little poem about my mom's, you know, I call her my ex. Mm. Because, you know, you have that relationship that's supposed to be loving and nurturing and it's supposed to train you and teach you things. I didn't get it. And so I had to finally break up with her emotionally and physically because she was draining me and tearing me down constantly. When I was 14, I met my now husband and he was telling her like, oh, your daughter's so pretty. You know, I just want to date her. And she was like, oh, what daughter? You know, like not which daughter, what daughter? Mm-hmm. So basically she was saying, I don't have no pretty daughter, so I don't know what you're talking about. And it was like, when your own mom doesn't encourage you or build you up, it makes every other relationship unbearable because you're just waiting for the next person to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Because that's your first relationship. Your mother is your very first relationship. And then if there's a father, he's your second relationship because your mother carried you. So whatever she does while she's carrying you is affecting you.
Absolutely.
And then once she gives birth to you, that first kiss. My mom told me she didn't give any of us a first kiss. She said that we all came out and kissed her ass. Well, now I have four children of my own and none of them came out that way. None of their faces were pointed towards my blood ox. So it was kind of discouraging to hear a mother say these things to her child, to me, because I just felt like, woman, just like me. You don't got to love me. Just like me. She didn't even like me, which is the worst part.
And you probably never, I mean, as a young person, like I said, your brain hasn't fully developed, but you get a sense of like, man, this doesn't feel good. I'm not feeling special. You had to feel that, but you couldn't necessarily put your finger on like, why am I not being treated like I'm special? Because when you think about mothers, not that we want to demonize moms because we don't know exactly. We don't know what your mom was going through. And again, we're not condoning it either.
Exactly.
But you want to understand like, man, what would be going on in her mind that she felt that was the way to parent you, right? It's just like, you know, it's abuse and it is neglect. Because I can get a sense of, like you said, if you're being abused, of course, you're going to be neglected in some ways too. Like you said, with your menstrual cycle, you didn't know what that was.
Exactly.
You didn't know what that was. So you didn't know that two nickels equaled a dime. Mm-hmm. So you were being neglected in some ways. So who took you to the doctor? Who did those things for you? Like taking you to the doctor, parent-teacher conference, like all those things that we look for parents to do, especially moms. You know, moms are automatically seen as nurturers and caregivers or just wanting to have kids, and not every mom wants to be a mom. And I think we kind of deem all moms want is as such, you know, nurturer, caregiver, and that's who you are. That's your title. Live with it. You got a womb. Therefore, you need to be having babies. But not all moms want kids. So who, you know, those are the things that moms do for you. They take you to parent-teacher conference. They take you shopping. Did you experience those things with her?
Not pleasurably.
Okay.
Okay, so quickly, what happened was with the parent-teacher conferences, I can only remember my mom coming to one. And literally, it was to tell them to hold me back because she did not want me passing her son up because I passed him. Mm-hmm. And she had them put me in special ed. And they was like, why are we putting this child in special ed? Like, there's nothing special ed about her. So finally, I didn't get out of special ed until I want to say fourth or fifth grade. Then finally, somebody just put their foot down like, I don't care what Miss Swim say. We're not putting this child. She's not doing special ed again. Mm-hmm. So I ended up in my right grade and then brushing teeth and things of that nature. No, there was no training. No, there was no checking to make sure it was done. Washing up. If we had running water, oh, maybe. Yeah. Like, when I tell you, at first I used to blame the house and say, this is the house's fault. If we don't have running water, it's the house's fault. Our house is nasty. But then as I got older, 11, 12, 13, my brain started seeing, I don't know, my mom's just nasty. She's just a nasty woman who's raising nasty children, and she don't care. And it's beyond our control at this point because she doesn't allow people in the house. She don't allow us to have company. We're not allowed to have friends in the house. Mm-hmm. I think my older brother, one of my older brothers, I think he had a few friends, but they had to be on the back porch. Okay. I don't think they can come inside our home. I don't remember too many people ever being in our home, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I could have just closed it off because of so much deplorableness and abuse. And I think it hurt more because I needed to talk to my mom. Because kids were teasing me in school saying I stink. And they weren't teasing me like, you stink. They were just like, hey, come here. You're so sweet. You're so kind. But you really smell bad. Like, they were being nice about it. They weren't bullies at all. So then my favorite lunch aide, who I ended up living with, she was like, yeah, you do stink. She was like, but we can fix that. She didn't say, oh, my God, you stink, child. She felt bad for me. She bought me a toothbrush, toothpaste. And I used to keep it in my locker and I used to go to school, brush my teeth at school. And then it kind of just like, it became everybody else's to deal with. And I felt that, I felt bad for everybody because they had to help me when I live in this house and I have money coming into this house because my dad is sending money to the house. but it's not using for my care. And
so she didn't teach you basic hygiene?
No.
Okay.
One time I still cry about this because one time I told her it was a school dance and I wanted to look good and smell good. And she told me that was my problem, not hers. She did not help me any way, shape, or form. I remember going to this girl named Michelle at school and I told her that I need help. I was like, please, I really want to go to the school dance. And she was like, well, come up to the school an hour and a half early. We'll get you in the showers. You can take a shower here and I'll do something to your hair. And I was like, I didn't want anybody touching my hair. And I was like, okay. So I went, she did, we did. And it worked out just fine. But and that was how I found out I was allergic to Illumina. That's in deodorant. Because the deodorant she gave me had Illumina in it. And I had the worst rash for the next 6 weeks.
Wow.
And nobody took care of it.
So like you said, you weren't getting her taking you shopping, teaching you the basic hygiene, brush your teeth. You know, you'll get your menstrual cycle and this is what you need to do. Mm-hmm. You didn't have any of those things going. Like I said, when she did go to, I want to just kind of restate what you said. When she did go to pantry conference, it was to hold you back, not pull you up.
Right. Not to allow my light to shine.
Yeah. Not to let you. Okay. So she was always trying to do things to just kind of keep you suppressed.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. One time I remember she took me shopping. If you guys remember downtown Hudson's.
Yeah.
I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, we're going to Hudson's. So we get in Hudson's and she says, I got to get a few things out of here. And I'm like, okay. I'm excited because I'm thinking getting a few things out of here because this is my money. Mm-hmm. No. She bought my siblings a few things and then took me across the street to SS Kresge's and then down to, I don't know if y'all remember that fabric store that was right, like, so it was SS Kresge's, then that little divide. Mm-hmm. And then as you walk down towards, she would be going north. My dad taught me that, north, south, east, and west. So you would be going north and then it was a fabric store. She took me in there. Oh, this is what I'm going to get you. And I didn't like any of it. And she's forcing this on me. She's like, you're going to like this. And I'm like, I don't like that. I don't like bell bottoms. I don't want you to make me this. Now, if you would have made me something that I wanted, I would have enjoyed that. But she forced everything on me. It was like, oh, you're going to like this. Oh, you like this. Oh, don't you like this? And if I said no, she said, yes, you do. So she never gave me a say. She pretended to give me a say, but never gave me one. Yeah.
So how does she treat you in front of family? Did you guys spend much time with family and friends? How does she treat you around family and friends?
Now, her sister, she was able to abuse me in front of her sister because it wasn't no big deal. Her sister didn't like me anyway. And I didn't understand why she didn't like me because, like, girl, we all look alike. Like, I look more like my mom and dad mix, but her sister wasn't far off from looking like her, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Now, none of her brothers looked like her. Like, oh, wait, Uncle Joe did. You could tell they were related. And Uncle Joe treated me very good. All my uncles treated me good, which was so weird to me. My one uncle, all of them rest in peace because all of them dead except her sister. Uncle Joe would come and get me. He let me stay the weekend with him, almost like it was a small victory, like because he would treat me good and give me ice cream and everything, all the things the kids dream of, the goodnight kiss and I love you, we going out in the morning type deal. You know, the father role, but he wasn't my father. And then Uncle Herbie was the same way. And he would always tell my mom they call her Aunt Pat, which I never understood why they call her Aunt Pat. When that was their big sister, but whatever. Okay. So he'd be like, I'm going to take her down with me because they lived in Ipsy. And so I had one family member who tells me, I remember living with her. I just didn't know it was a big fight about me living with her. And Patricia just wanted me back because she thought George, which is my biological father, was going to stop giving her the money if I wasn't living with her. But really, if she just would have let me stay there, she could have kept the money. Michelle told her, I don't care. You can have the money. I just want the child. So I had people who tried to save me. I had people who tried to help, but they were all afraid of her for some reason when it came down to it.
They wouldn't confront her about the abuse.
Mm-mm. I remember Michelle braiding my hair. I still cry about this, even though I'm a grown woman. But I remember she braided my hair. It was so pretty, and I was so excited, and I was just so happy to have my hair done. You know, she took my hair down the day before I went home and put it back into the ponytail. She told me, we can't let Patricia see you happy. And that's when I knew that they knew I was being abused.
And they were doing nothing about it.
I don't want to say they wasn't doing nothing about it. I want to say that they didn't do what they should have done, but they did try to give me happiness while I was with them.
While you were with them.
So they didn't abuse me themselves, right. But they allowed me to go home knowing I was being abused.
So if we can think about all the officials, family, friends that was in your life, and I know there are multiple stories that you could share that would, you know, express how abusive your mom was. And we don't necessarily have to go through all of them. Yeah. but you were abused and you were neglected. I mean, I know, I think you spoke extensively in the documentary about things, but what would you have wanted them to do? Like, let's say, for instance, let's say the school system. You know, I think sometimes the school system, they are at a loss for what to do or how to recognize when a child is being abused. What would you say the subtle things that they could probably look for in the most obvious things that they could look for? If there is a school official out there that's listening, mm-hmm. like what advice would you give them when you're in school and you see a child do what? There's a potential that they could be abused. What are some of the signs?
I love this question. So one thing that I always say, and I paid attention to because I became an in-school sub. So I always paid attention to when kids could be in the most chaos. I'm talking kids running around, pouring glue, and that one kid is off by themselves and they are oblivious to everything going on. That's because they're used to this chaos at home and they're just happy. No one's touching them, hitting them, pouring glue on them, and they're like a spectator at this point, watching all of this craziness, but it's not affecting them physically, and they're happy that it's not. Another thing is those kids, we call them bullies, but let's pay attention to the bullies. See, there's different kinds of bullies. There's the bullies who are hurting people because they're being hurt at home right now. They're being beat. They're being pushed around. Their siblings are doing mean things to them that we call sibling rivalry. And we need to stop saying that. That's still abuse. If your brother comes in your bedroom and knocks you off your bed, rips you off your bed, that's abuse. That's not civil rivalry. That's not fun, because somebody's taking you from a comfortable space and pulling you onto the floor, a hardwood floor, carpet floor. I don't care. It was unexpected. You guys weren't playing and having fun. They just did that to you. That's abuse. And that's the home bully. So now the kid who this is being done to goes and tell mom or dad or mom and dad, and they're like, oh, that's just your big brother being a big brother. So in their minds, because their brain is not fully developed, oh, so now I can go do this to other people because it's being done to me. So let me go to school and, oh, that girl got on the purple shirt. I want that purple shirt. Let me beat her up and push her around because she got on my favorite color. So now it's a mental gymnastics for this child who doesn't realize you don't get to beat her up because she has on a purple shirt, because you want a purple shirt, because now she's been trained at home or he's been trained at home that my brother pulling me out of my bed, stumping me on my back and doing whatever he wants to do to me is just him being a big brother.
Wow. That's heartbreaking. And so that's, like you said, so what I'm hearing you say is it's the kid that's somewhat isolated when they see all this chaos around them. The kid that's bullying other kids. These are the things that we have the potential, that could be a potential sign of abuse. Are there others signs?
You got the kid, the greedy kid. Pay attention to the greedy kid. Don't just call them greedy. If you see a kid who, like, say six kids sitting and somebody hasn't eaten their chips, and then they go, can I have some chips? But they're not really your friend, but they're willing to ask you for chips. They're not getting fed at home, because who walks up to a stranger and asks them for chips? You know, now we have all the stuff going on in the world where people beg for stuff. But I mean, as children, we're taught what's yours is yours and what's theirs is theirs. And we're taught not to take other people's stuff, not to eat other people's stuff. But these kids are willingly walking around asking for food. I used to do it. So I know that as being a sign of hungry all the time, like going to school, no breakfast. Going to school to eat breakfast, going to school to have lunch instead of getting an education. You're just trying to eat because you know tonight when you get home, you might not get to eat. You know, so it's a survival thing. And it's also a part of being abused. And it's a difference between neglect and abuse again when it comes to that, being fed, because a proper three meals a day is, you get that in jail. Why can't you get it at home? Okay. Because if you can go to jail and get fed three meals a day, why can't your parents provide three meals a day? Even if you say to your kid, I'm tired today, baby. Can you make you a bowl of cereal? At least I got cereal there to eat. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
I've been offered. And I come home from lunch. Oh, baby, go in there and make you a bologna sandwich. It's there for me to eat. It's a difference then when you say, Mom, I'm hungry. Go sit your butt down. I don't care. What you tell me you hungry for? I ain't the cook. I ain't the chef. Who says that to their child? Right. No, you get up and you make your kids something to eat.
And then it becomes to the point where now the kid doesn't even have anything offered to them. And now it's like, don't go in my kitchen. Don't touch my food. Don't touch my, I bought that. Now that becomes abuse. It's no longer neglect. Now it's abuse because now you're directly telling me I can't even eat out of the kitchen because that's yours.
Yeah. Well, are there any other subtle signs? I know you talked about hygiene.
Oh my gosh.
And you said your mom wasn't teaching you that. And the school system, like you said, people lovingly came to you and said, hey, they weren't bullying you or judging you, but they were lovingly coming up to you, telling you that your hygiene, you need to pay more attention to your hygiene. Is that something else that we should be looking at?
We definitely could look at that, but we also have to, that one's going to be a little harder for us in this, the way the world is set up, society is set up, because most kids love to smell good. Most kids love to look good. And these young ladies who are walking around, their hair look good, they got makeup on, but they stink. It's because their outer appearance is the only thing that they understand, because no one is teaching them at home to take care of their personal hygiene as well as looking good. But then you have some girls who still can't get wigs or weaves or braids or get their hair done, and they're just walking around like zombies, and they smell bad. And they're old enough to know that nobody wants to smell you, but because they're being abused at home and they may not have all the toiletries they need. Like, I grew up without toiletries. So now I overcompensate. Because if you come to my house right now, you've seen it. I don't even got to. Yeah. I overcompensate big time. I got enough soap and perfume to last about 30, 40 years because I overcompensate for never having that growing up and always afraid. I keep jugs of water in my house because I grew up never knowing when the water was going to get cut off. So it's things that we do to that shows we're being abused at home. And so with the smell, especially for boys, I hate to say this. I don't hate to say this because we need to know this, but especially for boys, because they think I'm supposed to stink. Somebody has put that in their head. It's okay for a boy to stink, instead of telling them when you get of a certain age, you're going to have a different smell. And so we need to correct that and clean that. If they're being abused at home, they don't care about that smell. They live in it. They revel in it because that's all they know and it's theirs. And that's one thing that people have to understand about being abused that I know they don't want to talk about and they're not ready to talk about. Kids who are being abused usually enjoy their own privacy of their abuse. And when I say that, let me make that clear. Stinking, stealing, doing what they need to do to survive, that's their private. They don't need to tell all their friends. They don't need people outside. They don't need the girl next door knowing that I got a crush on you, but I can't talk to you because I'm getting beat inside this house. They're still going to talk to that girl next door. They're still going to try to make relationship with her, but they're afraid at the same time for her to ever come inside and see what's going on. So they keep that private. And when you keep it private, that's where the abusers win, because now they're like, so he like her. I can beat him up. I can do this in front of her. I can embarrass him in front of her, or her in front of him. You see? Yeah. So now their abuse becomes public. And that's when the shame comes in. And shame, sometimes it sets in differently for each person. My shame didn't come until some of the kids started telling me I stink in high school. Because middle school, nobody cared what I smelled like. We was all kids running around. We all stunk. Who cares?
In high school, you want to smell a little better.
Different.
You're trying to impress people.
Exactly. You're trying to get a boyfriend or girlfriend. You're trying to get invited to the dances and things of that nature. And over other people's houses. You know, sometimes we forget about that. When kids are being abused, they don't normally go over other people's houses or have other people at their houses.
Okay. So we just went over some of the subtle and obvious signs. So I think those were more subtle. Are there any obvious signs that you can think of that would, you know, tell us that a child may be potentially being abused?
Flinching. Whenever we had this little thing where we would stand in front of the door as the kindergartners come in and we would get them a hug, but we had to have a permission slip from the parents to give them a hug. Kids who go, like, I'm just gonna hug you. And it's like, oh, okay, that it? You know, that lets you know they got something going on.
Potentially,
because who flinches from a hug? Mm-hmm. I can see if I came like that, but to come with arms open, that's a little scary. My trigger was people walking up behind me. That was my trigger. When people do this, tap me on my back, I'm just like jumping out of my skin into a whole nother decade. Because it's like,
what did I do? Yeah. And it's always the fear. And one thing that I always tell parents or teachers, aides and stuff to look for, when kids say this to you, I didn't do it. And you're like, I didn't say you did it. Look at that. Because why are they already saying they didn't do something?
Trying to defend themselves.
Trying to defend themselves. Because they're defending themselves because at home, they don't have no way of defending themselves. And they're always getting blamed and abused.
Okay. What were some of the other signs? You did kind of talk about the signs in terms of you, in terms of what you encounter. I'm glad you just mentioned that when someone tapped you from behind. You mentioned the hygiene. You mentioned not eating. What were some of the other signs that people may have potentially missed?
Clingy. I was very clingy to women only. I love her. Miss DeJesus, Miss Yagnik. Like, I was so clingy to them. And it was also this thing that I didn't even realize I had it until I got older. I think I was in my 30s when I realized it. I've been doing it my whole life, but I never realized it. I'm always looking for a mother in somebody else's mother, the way they get mothered. So like if I was to meet your mother and she was hugging you and kissing on you, I want that now from your mom.
From my mom.
Because it's like, she's a safe space. And I call myself safe space because of the things I've done for children. I've taken in children. I've helped children. And I call myself safe space. So when I meet other safe space moms, I want them to be my mom. Even when they're younger than me. Like when I first met you, I was like, oh, she's going to be my mom. Because the first thing you said to me was like, it's so nice to meet you. And I'm like, oh. And you was like, welcome, come on in. And you offer me tea and stuff. And I'm like, my new mom. So it's
automatically.
It's nothing you can do to prevent it. But because of the struggle, it's just mom.
Wow.
Going straight into mom mode, wanting a mom.
That makes sense. Okay.
So when kids are clingy, it could be to a male teacher too. It's just I was with the women teacher because my lack, the most abuse was coming from my mom. My dad abused me too, but my mom's abuse was very intense because she had 7 kids. So why was I zoomed in on? So that's why it was just worse for me with her.
Okay. So thanks for that. Those are, you're answering these questions very thoroughly, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let me ask you this question. What language should be spoken to the abused child? If a person wants to understand a child is being abused, right? You can't just come out, right? You,
right.
Like, you know, I think some people are at a loss for the language. Like, what do I say to a child that I think may be potentially being abused?
Oh, I love this question.
What do you say?
So first of all, you want to engage with that child. You never want to make them feel like they're in being interrogated. So you would give them open questions where they don't have to answer you, but can answer you. So like if you say to me, good morning, butterfly, how was your night? Did you sleep well? And I'm being abused at home, I can just say, not so well. Instead of you coming and saying, good morning, butterfly. I bet you had a great night's sleep, didn't you? Don't assume. Because when you assume, you know the old saying, right? Mm-hmm. So you're definitely making one out of both of us at that moment. Because here I am crying, struggling to breathe. And you assuming that I had a good night's sleep. Or when a teacher says to a child, like say a child who comes in and they're always late. Mm-hmm. This is my pet peeve. When a child is always late, understand it's an underlying why that child is always late, especially if they walk to school. Especially if they walk to school. Because here's the thing, they're in their moment of freedom. And that's not being yelled at by mom or beat by mom or dad or big brother, big sister, and not having to walk into this school with bullies and mean teachers and people who don't care about the human being who they are. They only care about getting their paycheck, and other kids only care about what they're going through. So nobody can really see them. So now they get to school and they're late all the time. They're out on the playground, playing, living in their best life, which I used to do. So I know what I'm saying. And it's like, nobody cares. I'm late, but it becomes a problem after that Wednesday. Count day. It's called count day. Mm-hmm. And so now the teachers are coming, hey, get this girl here, get this boy here. I don't care what you got to do. Get them here on time for count day. And they just let the abuse go because they don't care. It's the bottom line is their budget and their money. So who cares about a kid being abused?
But in that case, what do you say to that child? Like I said, I think I don't want to think that no one cares, because I believe that there are people that care.
But I shouldn't have said no one. I'm sorry. I misspoke. It's a lot of people who care, because if it wasn't, I wouldn't be sitting here. So it's a lot of people who care.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of people don't know what to do.
Yeah. But for the people who care and want to help but don't have the language, what would you say to that child that's showing up late?
I would just talk to him in a sweet way and say, "Hi, you don't like me?" And then why would you say that? I want to be your favorite teacher. I want you here on time. So when I'm greeting my class, I get to greet you too. I want to greet you every morning. When my class rolls in here at 8:30, I want you to be in that line. I want to say hi to you. I want to see your beautiful face. Now you're giving them a dialogue to say, somebody do care about me. Because instead of saying, why are you always late? Why are you late every day? Don't pressure them. Talk to them nicely. Talk to them the way you want somebody to talk to you. Build a rapport. Build up that love and that energy. So now this kid is going, oh, somebody care about me. Let me get to school on time. But then that kid will slowly start telling you stuff too. And I mean, it will be kind of slow. And then you got to be patient, because they're not just going to come out just because you told them come on time. You want to see their beautiful face. They might start saying stuff like, I had a hard time getting up today. And then you can say, oh, what happened? What stopped you from getting up today? And then they give them that dialogue so that they can tell you what they need to say. Don't force things on them like, what you mean you had a hard time getting? Don't talk like that. Talk in you questioning them in a different way of using the questions.
A non-judgmental.
I'm here for you. I'm listening. Not what, why, when, huh?
Blame me.
Right. Don't blame them. Take it away from them. So now they're able to say, oh, wait, I'm not getting blamed for being late. Okay, let me tell you what's going on. And then before you know it, this kid will spill his guts out to you. Mm-hmm. But you got to be kind and loving. You can't be harsh. You can't be blaming them for things. And you got to always remember that at the end of the day, they're a child. They don't know who they can trust, because the people who they're supposed to be able to trust are beating on them, are hurting them, are not feeding them. And so when you think about the fact that if you trust somebody and that's the person who's hurting you, now who do you trust?
Yeah.
And that goes with every relationship. If the person who you're supposed to be able to trust, mother, father, sister, brother, uncle, auntie, teachers, doctors, and now they have broken the trust, what do you do? How do you handle that? And as a child, your brain is not even developed enough to say, who do I go to now? Because now you're just thinking, mommy and daddy are beating me. Mama or daddy is hurting me. I don't have nobody to turn to, because that's who I'm supposed to run to when somebody's hurting me.
Wow. Thank you for that. That was very helpful. Butterfly, why do you think people are afraid to get involved? Because I think sometimes people, you know, they may even have the language, mm-hmm. right? But there are some people who just don't want to get involved. Why do you think that is?
Well, one thing could be the repercussions. And when I say repercussions, you can have all the good intentions, but that family can be like, oh, you're not finna get in our business calling CPS, cutting off my welfare. And sometimes, sadly, children come down to a welfare check or food stamp benefits. And so they don't want people in that business. No, stay out of my business. My kid is a liar. That ain't never happened in my house. I don't care what you say. Even if you see bruises on that kid, they did that themselves. They always manage to blame the child for what happens to them. So as a person, as an adult or a person who's trying to intervene and help, we get afraid. We become afraid. My thing was always, I just took the kid. I done took so many kids in my home. I just take them home with me. Because why fight with her? Why fight with him? I'm just taking this kid home and give him a safe place to be, get their hair washed and done and cook them a nice meal and buy them an outfit or two and do what I can inside the home and hold them as long as I can, literally.
In an ideal world, it would be nice if we could lovingly confront the abusers, mm-hmm. right? I think we often protect them.
We do.
Unconsciously.
We do.
Like you said, because we don't want to get in their business. Mm-hmm. We don't want them to, you know,
retaliate.
They can
fight us.
Yeah.
Try to get us fired.
Yeah.
So say we touch their kids.
So there's so many variables that kind of keep people from approaching the adult, right?
Yeah.
So you feel like, you know, the kid is the safest. Let me just, you know, provide this safe environment when I'm around them, like your family members did.
Yes.
They braided your hair. They treated you like the butterfly, beautiful butterfly that you are and were. And so they gave you that moment of just so you could exhale.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be nice, though, if people could, you know, because there's strength in numbers, right? There's strength in numbers.
Definitely.
And so if you had everybody saying, hey, we're not standing for this. We know what you're doing. Hey, what's happening with you that you're projecting this onto your child? Because clearly there's something going on with that person that they're projecting so much hate and bitterness onto a child. Because clearly you didn't do nothing to your mom to deserve any of that. No child deserves that, right? Because we're the adults, right? Mm-hmm. And so clearly there's something going on with that parent. So I often like to, when you do have to confront somebody, you want to do it in a manner that's not, you know,
confrontational.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that they can receive help because like, man, there's something going on with you that this has happened. Mm-hmm. And I want to support you. How can we support you, right? And I think that needs to be a discussion. I mean, as upset that I may get when I find that a child is being abused, when I used to work in community mental health, I knew there was not just community mental health. I just don't want to say community mental health because it can happen in the private sector too. So let me not say that because it happens all across the board, be it you being in poverty, or you a millionaire.
In fact.
Abuse is abuse.
Yeah.
In all different socioeconomic status. So I will not say that can only be abused if they're in poverty. So let's clear that up.
Let's clear that up because it don't matter.
Because it really doesn't matter.
Because I've seen rich people growing up who lived up in Norville, and we would go play ball games and stuff. How you got all them bruises on you? Oh, daddy beating on you. Mm-hmm. Mama beating on you. And things that I try to tell people to always remember, when you got to be careful when you're trying to help a child, don't call CPS so quick because these parents will get up and move. And I've seen it firsthand. They would get up and move. See, now it's a little harder to get up and move because rent's so high. And so you might have a chance to help that kid. But back in the day when we were growing up, no. You can call CPS on Monday. They come on Wednesday and that parent moved by Friday. Because they're like, no, ain't nobody stopping my checks. Ain't nobody stopping my flow.
So that was the focus.
Yeah, they would get up and move instead of get. And so I know that it's kind of hard and it's a rock. But it's a little easier now, so. But still, don't call CPS right away because, like you said, sometimes it could just be that parent just needs help and wants help, but don't know where to turn to. And now you open up this avenue for them to turn and get help, and you may be able to get them into family therapy, and then they'll be able to rectify the situation and be a better parent.
Yeah. That's always a hard call because if there's a child being abused and it's obvious...
That's different.
CPS has to be called.
If you see that kid coming there with a black eye and, you know, bloody nose, broken this, broken that. I always tell this story. It's a true story. What happened to me. Children who are abused learn to lie from their parents. Okay. All children learn to lie from their parents. Just know that. So my mom was on the phone and she lied and she told somebody that she couldn't come to work because I had to get my appendix out. So I was sick. And so I went up to the school, even though I didn't go to school that day. And I told everybody, I can't stay because I got my appendix out. I heard my mom tell the lie, so I just assumed my appendix was out. I didn't know if it was surgery or nothing. I ain't never had surgery. So I come back home and the teacher takes me home and tells my mom what I say. And she beat the hell out of me. But I heard you telling somebody
that. I heard
you
say it.
So how dare I get beat for the lie that you told? You know, but I was home because I had, at a young age, because I was being touched and stuff, I had cold sores in my mouth. A child shouldn't have cold sores in their mouth. Like, why does she have cold sores? And so she didn't want nobody asking no questions. So she kept me home from school. And then I went to go see the doctor and he said that it was, I forgot what we call them, like mouth warts or whatever. And he just gave us a mouth rinse stuff. I forgot what it was called, but it was nasty. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that. It tastes like Pepto Bismol. But it was clear.
I used to like Pepto Bismol.
You too?
I did.
There's something wrong with us because I love Pepto Bismol.
I used to like it.
I used to be like, oh, my tummy hurt. Let me go drink some. Okay. It tastes like clear Pepto Bismol. And it got rid of them or whatever. But the point is, I learned to laugh from my mom's lie. Just like when DT would come to cut, well, it was called Mishcon back then. They come to cut stuff off and my mom like, tell them I ain't here. I learned to lie. You sitting right here, woman. My mama ain't here.
Oh.
So we have to take that consideration too. Abusers teach their children how to lie. All parents teach their children how to lie unapologetically because they say things like that, like tell them I'm not home. Why do I got to tell them you're not home? Why can't I just tell them you're busy or that you don't want to be bothered? Why can't I just tell them my mom doesn't want to be bothered with you?
Right.
Or be bothered, period. Or my mom's busy. Why do I got to lie and say you're not home? Now here I am, a child answering the door, telling the grown person, oh, my mama ain't home. I'm home alone.
Right.
Like, what?
That's a very good point. And like I said, it's so subtle. You don't realize, or a parent, that I actually did this segment on Instagram where I talk about, don't tell your mom, don't tell your dad.
Oh, I hate that.
You know, you really shouldn't do that. Like I said, you're right, Butterfly. You teach your children how to lie when you do that. Mm-hmm. And you think it's innocent, but it's not. They grow up hearing that and they normalize mm-hmm. that. So that's a form of neglect. But just being conscious and intentional about those things, I think, is so important.
Yeah.
So I have one last question.
Okie dokie.
That you have done amazing with answering all these questions, and I think our audience is going to learn so much.
Thank you.
I really want teachers to, and just adults all around, to be mindful of the signs of mm-hmm. abuse. When a child is being abused, do you feel like, for you, was there an internal cry that you wanted to share with people, like what was happening to you?
Mm-hmm.
Or did you ever really share?
Nope. I had an internal cry that I wish people could have saw, but I didn't understand because I'm a child. So I don't understand if people can't see just by looking at me that I was being abused, because I didn't come to school with black eyes. Only thing was wrong with me until like eighth grade was my hair was never, it was in the exact same hairstyle. But other than that, that was not really a cry for like, why is her hair in the same, you know, year after year, don't nobody care about your hair. They just worried about giving you an education. But my main cry was that I would go to women teachers and linger even after the class is over. And I'd be like, you want me to clean the chalkboard? But not like a normal kid, like, oh, let me clean the chalkboard. I wanted to have that more time with them because they were safe to me. Mm-hmm. And so it got to the point where teachers would start saying stuff like, you got to go to your next class. Come on, let's go. And even if I didn't like the next teacher, I would, oh, my tummy hurt. Can I just sit here? Because I don't want them to know. You know, that was my internal cry to them. Like, help me. You've been good to me. I need you to see something is wrong. Ask me why is my stomach hurting all of a sudden. It ain't been hurting all day. It ain't been hurting the whole time I was in your room, but now it's time to go to this next class. What's going on? Another internal cry that I had that is so sad is that I would say things to my teachers like smart mouth stuff, because being able to freely get smart mouth with them felt good to me, because at home I couldn't say nothing like that to my mom. My mom told me, get up and go do this. I just got up and did the dishes. If I said, my teacher said, turn your homework in, I don't feel like it. I turn it in later. You know, like, no, turn your homework in. The class is turning theirs in. Well, I don't have it. I lost it. It failed. The dog ate it. I didn't even have a dog. Never had an animal growing up. But yeah. It was like different little smart mouth stuff that I could say. Like when I met Miss Jacknick, the first thing I said to her, she said, where's your ID and what's your name? And I said, my name is Clintane. Ask me again. I'm going to tell you the same.
She was one of your teachers.
She wasn't even my teacher.
But she was a teacher at the school.
She was a teacher at the school, but she was an aide mm-hmm. in the hallway to keep the kids flowing, going to their room. So I wasn't expecting her to follow me to the library. And I was like, oh, no, she followed me. And then she asked for my ID again. So I finally gave it to her and I had put my fingers over my name mm-hmm. so she could only see my face. And she tried to snatch it. And I'm like, oh, this lady's strong. But it was like, that was my internal cry, because you gave me more than the normal attention. Because most teachers, if I say Clintane, ask me again, say the same, they'll be like, okay, bye, Clintane.
Like, she follows you.
Mm-hmm. They wouldn't care. They'd just be like, okay, bye, Clintane. Have a good day.
She gave
me, and she gave me the attention. And she opened up that door to make me feel like I might have somebody. She may be the one that I can cry to. This may be it. This may be my victory. And I had no clue how wonderful that relationship was going to turn into. And I'm still friends with her to this day.
That's awesome. That's beautiful. That is beautiful. She's part of the documentary. So as we close, you have Butterfly is a writer and a poet. Mm-hmm. If you didn't know it.
You are funny.
I know. But I am so excited to hear the poem that you have for us today.
Okay.
And then after your poem, we're going to close things out. But I do appreciate you being here. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Spend time with you.
I didn't know I could talk so well.
You did amazing.
Thank you. I get so nervous, especially talking about abuse. Mm-hmm. And I'll be trying to fight. Like, don't cry. You strong. You got this. You out of it.
No, but you did amazing. You helped me. You helped our listeners.
Yay.
Yeah. So thank you so much for, you know, sacrificing time to be here.
You are so welcome. So what I do is I spit off the dome mostly. I write sometimes.
Okay.
So I'm going to record myself as I do this piece for you. So I just changed the name of it because of you.
So the title is The Silent Cry of a Child Abused, of a Child Abused. I grew up abused. Of course, I can't give you eye contact. I grew up abused, so I apologize for everything, even when it's just like that. It's not my fault that I was put here, but it is my fault that they abused me, dear. I understand that abuse comes in all shapes and sizes, and I guess I fit the mold for all shapes and sizes as I was abused. It's not my fault I was abused. It's only my fault if I don't tell you. But I can't tell you, so please look at me and see all the abuse inside of me. Open your eyes. Please see. I've been abused since I was around 3. I don't remember the last time I ever felt safe. So I embrace every embrace. So please embrace me by seeing that I was abused. I grew up abused. I hide from adults that yell and scream. I grew up abused. I cry when I feel I've upset you. I grew up abused. Certain things were withheld from me, so I overcompensate. I grew up abused. I grew up abused. Of course, I jump when someone says, "How high?" because I don't want to make you cry. I grew up abused. Of course, I am a people pleaser, so please let me please you. I grew up abused. Of course, I'm afraid to not get it right on the first try. Did I make you happy? Was that okay? Did I do everything you asked me to? How sweet. I grew up abused. Sometimes I'll hide food just in case I'm not fed tonight. I grew up abused. Of course, I have no boundaries because none was given to me. I was not allowed to say, "Please don't touch me." I grew up abused. Even as an adult, I act like a child because childlike activities kept me from being beaten. So when I do the things that I know you will approve of, it's childlike because I really didn't want to go to the movies. I grew up abused. Of course, all my relationships suffer. I don't understand no or how to say I love you without feeling like I am the best of you. I want you to understand that I grew up abused, so of course I assume it's my fault. Even if I had nothing to do with it, I may not even been there. But it was me. I know. I'm sorry. I hope you don't beat me. I grew up abused. Of course, I don't want anyone to know. I hide my scars with long sleeve shirts, turtlenecks in the summer. Didn't you know? That's not just for hickeys anymore. I grew up abused, but now I'm getting help. See, I grew up abused and I can keep that on the shelf, but a part of me that breaks down and cry eternally is the fact that I had to go through that all by myself. So I grew up abused, but now I grew up. Thank you.
Oh, that was beautiful. That was, you are so gifted.
Thank you.
And out of your pain, this beautiful gift to write poetry. You've blessed us with that poem, Butterfly, and I thank you. I got choked up there. I had to really kind of brace myself because there are some things in there that just, wow, you never think about a person who apologizes constantly, the potential of the reality that they may have been abused because they want to please everybody. They want reassurance that we're okay.
Yep.
Definitely. Are we good? We're okay. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be abandoned.
Yeah.
They want to be loved. And they feel like the love is conditioned.
All love is conditional when it comes to an abused child.
Yeah.
Every abused human, because they're not growing up and they still feel it. It hurts.
Yeah.
It really does.
The Silent Cry of Child Abuse is our title today. Thanks for joining today's episode. If you enjoyed the story time, don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Leave us a review and share with your friends to help us reach more listeners. Stay tuned for more insightful stories. Until next time, take care and keep exploring.